You can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious!
Now, Don, I know you say that I'm a control freak. That's what you...
Well, you've passed that quality on to your son, Jack.
So, when I left it for you to get a guest to come in this week, and you informed me yesterday that you hadn't got anyone or the person you'd ask hadn't got back to you, it swung over to me again, and as it has for the last year and a half. And I managed to get in touch with a... Ex-work colleague, what?
Can I say that you've exceeded yourself today? I am really looking forward to this interview.
I managed to get in touch with an ex-colleague of mine, use that term loosely, because I worked with him and Rex Hunt and Harry Beitzel at 3AW when he was the supreme racing king called Racing Ron. This is unresearched, really, most of this, because you're the racing man. But the man I'm about to introduce has been part of the racing scene and seen all the great horses from the mid-40s. He started in 1948, going to the Melbourne Cup, and his last official duty was in 1993, officially, but has been an integral part for more than 45, 50 years of racing in Australia. His name is Racing Ron Taylor. And my first question to Racing Ron Taylor, because he's going to fill in most of the gaps here of my pretty Dorothy Dix questions, although you'll probably ask him questions that no one will understand, let alone Ron, but because you'll try and show that you're a racing man. But my first welcome to you, Ron, Racing Ron Taylor, is first of all, could you tell me how old you are?
Yes, Sam, I'm 93.
And you look fantastic. You drove yourself in here. You ignored my offer of getting a cab in here, and you've driven yourself in here.
Yes, I did.
And when we put you on our social platform to show it, people will be staggered. Now, Ron, what...
Well, hang on. Let me also praise him for his sense of dress and the way he takes pride in his appearance. It's remarkable, Ron, and it's a compliment. And I remember reading you in The Truth, but what used to fascinate me with The Truth was page 3. Could you tell me who was the best-looking lady that you, in your time, featured on page 3 of The Truth?
Well, there were so many of them, Don. There were some lovely ladies there.
In the day, Ron, did it get you up and about?
Oh, it certainly did. And there was one day they even threw a pile of photos on my desk and said, "You choose the guy."
Fantastic.
So they were fun days. But she was a great feature of The Truth, the page 3 girl, because we were about the only paper that would dare to show a female with bare breasts. And some of them were quite ample.
Thank you, Ron.
The Truth was a different paper back then, wasn't it? It was really left field.
So absolutely. We were,
called a rag. It was in that day, it was called a rag by the others.
A lot of people called it a rag.
The bloke who owned The Truth, wasn't his secretary a dog? what was his name?
Mark Day. Thompson.
Not Mark Day. Someone who owned.
Before that, Ezra Norton.
Who owned The Truth as a tax dodge made his dog. Made his dog the secretary so he could write his dog off. What was his name?
Well, no, that's a new one on me, Sam.
I might have got the wrong paper. Could I just ask you this, Ron? Yeah. When they threw all the photos and said, "You choose," did you go for the lass with the largest breastal areas, or did you just think, no, I'll tone it down a bit and I'll go for middle road? middle ground.
Now don't ask me to be about that. I just went for the prettiest girl.
Absolutely.
The one that would appeal to the people who bought the paper.
Quite right. And that would be the one with the big breast. Now, Ron, I know this, but I don't know how I know this, just through general knowledge, that you've been part of the halcyon era of racing. My question is, are the horses that you've seen, Rising Fast, Tullock, Kingston Town, Think Be, all the horses from when you started, were they better today, better then than they are today? And I suppose the only way you would pick that is, are the times that they run better today, or... Is that's a pretty convoluted question, which I've no idea what I'm talking about.
Because
how do you decide which horses go down in the legend status?
Well, I think the horses of today would be equal. I mean, very elegant, who won the Melbourne Cup. She would have held her own if she was back there in the day of Tullock and Rising Fast. And
well, so she would have been better.
So I would have to say the horses of today, the champions, the real number one and two, three, they would be up there with the great horses of the past, with the exception of the one I did not see was Farlap.
Farlap. I just said to Don before we started this, when I told him you were coming in, I know Farlap died in 1932, I think. Yeah, I just go, and you're 93. Would you have been alive? You wouldn't have known Farlap, would you?
No.
You were born in
1928.
You were born in 20, so you were five when Farlap... You would vaguely know about
him. Yeah, he raced in 1930, so I was two when he was running, but I was a babe in arms,
You were.
And a long way from Melbourne too.
So just on the horses today, the one that won the cup yesterday, what did you say its name was? Sorry.
Very elegant.
Very elegant. So in order to compare, it's like athletes, the times get better. Have the times got better over the years, or are they still same?
No, not really. The record for the Melbourne Cup still stands, and I think...
it's Kingston Rule.
Kingston Town?
No.
Now, Kingston Rule, 316, about 316. And interesting, Ron, if you looked at the time...
When was that, Don? What year?
Oh, about 1990, wasn't it? Kingston Rule, Kingston 1990. Rule.
Never heard of Kingston Rule.
And the track was...
Real good on numbers.
The track was really hard back in those days. I remember coming around the bend, you know, the dirt was actually flying. You know, it was dust. Yet the tracks nowadays are manicured and watered.
Oh, they do. They water them. They have to put so much water on them. Trainers are deadly afraid that their horses will jar up.
Well, they used to, Ron, when they came from England initially, remember.
But in those days, they never watered the track.
No.
They used to call it track fast. And that would have been, in these days, what we'd say a number one or number two track.
That horse yesterday that won the cup, actually, that ran a pretty quick time. That was a 3.17. So what you were saying earlier, that horse is the equal of the ones that you mentioned.
Yeah, Kingston Rule and those. Yeah, you're right.
You know, what would a second be as far as lengths go?
Oh, six lengths.
It's a fair difference.
So, Ron. You're going to help me here. Over your extensive and stellar career, what are some of the great memories of the horses like Red Handed and Light Fingers and Think Big and in modern days Winx and Black Caviar and the personalities that you got to know? Just what are some of the anecdotes that you might just tell us that are either mentioned in your book Racing Ron or that didn't make it to print?
Well, one of the anecdotes concerned Bart Cummings. Bart was a very hard guy to get to know. He was a pretty private person, and he'd like a bit of a joke. And what I never got really close to him, although we were friendly. Yeah. But one day when I was in Tokyo, for the running of the Japan Cup. And Bart was there, he had a runner, and we both turned up at the office of the secretariat to get our credentials at the same time. And Bart was wearing a lovely bomber jacket, a beautiful nylon yeah. jacket with Japan Cup on it. And we're standing side by side, and he said, "Hey, Ron, why haven't you got one of these?" And I said, "Oh, I'm not entitled to it, Bart. That's only for the trainers and the owners." "Oh," he said, "be buggered at that." He said, "Come with me." And he took me down a corridor to a room that was loaded with hangers, lined with all these lovely jackets. He said, "What size are you?" And I said, "Oh, medium." He said, "Here." And he grabbed one off the hook. He said, "This is yours." And he gave me this beautiful nylon jacket, and I thought, well, what a nice gesture from a bloke.
Seeing it wasn't his.
No.
How did he have entree to the room? How did he have entree to that room?
I don't know. It was the room where Bart went. No, it was a locked. It was a storeroom. It would have been.
Have you still got the jacket?
But Bart knew his way.
Yeah.
He knew where to go, and he said, "Oh, if it's good enough for me, Ron, that's good enough for you."
And have you still got it?
I have got it.
That's fantastic.
I can still wear it.
And what year was that?
1982.
Fantastic. Now, what about the other, Don, what about the other personalities? Tommy Smith, you, Colin Hayes, you've known those people well, I presume. And the jockeys, George Moore and Roy Higgins and all the well-credentialed names that we just roll off the tongue, even if you don't know a lot about racing, which I don't.
Well, they were in the paper, and that was my job, Dawn. My job was to go out and talk to these guys, Smith, Hayes and all that, and get the news and put it in the Truth. And if I could talk to them into trying to put me onto a winner, so much the better. And it is true, when I was at Truth, I could tip the odd winner when yeah. I was at Truth, but the reason I could do that, I had the ear of Colin yeah. and Tommy, and they were friendly. They would
because they respected you because you didn't dud them.
Well, they'd tip you onto a horse.
This horse is going great guns. You know, you want to, you know, have something on him on Saturday. And there was, one day back in the early times when Tommy had four runners in the Derby in Sydney, and I happened to be at the bar buying a drink, and Tommy was standing next to me, and he just turned around to me and he said, "Ron, I'll win the Derby today." And I said, "Oh, thank you." He said, "I'll win it with Prince Grant." And I said, "Oh, good, thanks, Tommy." And I went out to the ring, and Prince Grant was 50-1.
Really?
True as God. And I had my pound each way.
What year was that? Before 1966? No, a pound.
Yeah, about 1980.
You'd had a dollar.
$2?
$2. These were the days of pounds.
No, that's going back.
It wasn't
1960s.
1966. Has to be before 1966.
Yes. Well, it was certainly way back then.
Okay, so you had a pound. I was just saying that's a hell of a lot of money.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, a pound in those days was worth
a hell of a lot of money. And so, Ron, and you won at 50-1, did you? A pound?
I had a pound each way.
Holy shit.
And Tommy had three other runners in the race at shorter price. Why did he tell me a 50-1 chance? But he did.
Yeah, but the trainers could really set them up back then, though, couldn't they?
They could.
You know, they'd run them early morning or whenever or take them out.
And they'd take them up the bush.
Exactly right. And there wasn't the coverage or the scrutiny that there is nowadays. The stewards weren't around on the courses again, you know, training on the training track, so they could get away with a lot more.
Of course they could.
Horses fascinate me. Tullock. Now, that was, to me, an amazing horse, winning over the distances that it did win over a period of time. But when it went, it came back from injury too.
Yes.
A very bad injury, sickness, illness, and it still continued on. But it never threw anything.
No,
Why do you, why, Have you ever thought about that? Or
never what, Don?
It never threw anything. It was a stallion, but it never had started.
He didn't get any good progeny.
Progeny.
Oh, his offspring weren't or any crash shot, Sam.
Yep.
Maybe that was because he did have a terribly sick period when he couldn't race for two years. He was very ill.
Yep.
Well, what that might have done to his, you know, reproductive hormones or whatever.
What about the horse yesterday that won? Its parent is a stallion, you know, a sire. This horse, do you think it's a freak? Because the sire, they sent it down to some, you know, station or something. It was serving Clydesdale mares or crossbred mares. They've got a particular breed over in New Zealand, a pleasure type horse they use for hunting. You know, it's $600 a serve. Now, here's it, you know, it come this its progeny comes out and wins the Melbourne Cup yesterday, the mare.
Well, so that's the whole sort of charisma of the racing game. It's so hard to predict. I mean, mares that are champions who won Melbourne Cups and all the great weight for age races, like Light Fingers, for instance, when they go to stud, their offspring they couldn't produce anything like themselves. Tranquil Star, by going back a long way, remember her?
You remember them all, Don. So you keep
Sailor's Guide.
You keep to the
esoteric. Tobin Bronze.
You keep to the
He was a great horse.
Oh. You keep to the esoteric stuff about mentioning chapter and verse. I'll keep it to the layman's questions so that people might vaguely understand something that we ask. Ron, what is the most memorable? You've did it for 45 years officially, and you've been to plenty after that, after 1993. What is the most memorable Melbourne Cup that you experienced, and why?
Well, it's not hard to remember.
Isn't it?
It was Kiwi, one of those New Zealand horses that you're talking about.
Yeah.
Kiwi was trained on a farm in New Zealand, and He'd won one good race. He did win the Wellington Cup before he came to Melbourne. But he really came to Melbourne. Nobody knew anything about him. He'd never raced here. He was a 10-to-1 chance.
What year? About? Oh, Don,
I can never remember. I'm hopeless.
Was it
on
the
years.
I don't know, 70s?
No idea. Go on.
70s. Might have.
I remember the name Kiwi.
I can't.
Anyhow, go ahead.
Look, some guys can rattle off Melbourne Cup winners, and I can't remember dates.
Go ahead. I'll see if I can Google it while you're talking.
But Kiwi, it'll be in that book. Don't worry, in that book. But he came over, and he'd never raced here. People in Australia didn't know much about him at all, but there was a fella in Adelaide called David Coles. You heard of David? He was a big bloodstock agent. Anyway, I was friendly with him, and I met him one day at the race. He said, "Ron, this horse from New Zealand, Kiwi, he can win the Melbourne Cup." He said, "I saw him win the Wellington Cup in New Zealand, and there'd be nothing in Australia to beat him." So, Don, when I went back to prepare the truth for the Melbourne Cup, I put a big headline up, Kiwi to shine.
Really?
Yes, for the boot polish.
For the boot polish.
Very,
that's right.
Very
Kiwi
clever.
Kiwi to shine was the big headline.
Yeah.
And he
1983.
What was so memorable?
83, I think it
83.
Says here.
That good right? On you, Sam.
Well, I only looked up the machine.
Well, I just wanted to tell why it was so memorable. When you watch the race.
Kiwi to shine.
With a mile to go, looking over at the back there to Chiquita Lodge. Kiwi was 50 lengths, 60 lengths last.
No.
He was right at the end of the field.
50 lengths?
Yeah, at least. There might have been one horse behind him. But I'm sitting there in the press box and I'm thinking to myself, Ron, you are an idiot. Here's a horse you've never seen. You've tipped him this. Yeah. You've never seen him. Here he is, tailed off nearly last. Absolutely hope. Got no hope.
And he greeted the judge.
And fair dinkum, Stan.
He mowed them down, didn't he?
Yeah, but what he did, coming around the home turn, instead of going to the outside, little Jimmy Cassidy weaved his way, found every little gap, and he came through the field, and with a furlong to go, he was running about 10th. And then in the last 50 metres to 100 metres, he just had wings and he burst from the pack and he won.
Extraordinary.
It was the most memorable.
They made a film about him, Ron. Did you know that?
I didn't know there was a film.
Yeah.
Pardon me.
Did they give you a raise at the Truth for saying Kiwi to
no,
shine?
No. Now, that's funny. Not at that time. But when Mark Day took over the Truth, and I can't remember the year, Sam, but a horse called At-Talak won the Melbourne Cup. And when I went to work the following day, during the day, I got a little official memo from Mark Day in his handwriting, and it just said, anyone who can tip a 10-1 winner of the Melbourne Cup deserves a raise.
1986, it won the Melbourne Cup.
86?
I'm only just... You mentioned the horses, I'll Google them.
Yep.
That's what it says here.
And Mark Day, actually without any prompting from me, said, you deserve a raise. And I got lifted from...
Hang on, so you predicted At-Talak to win the Cup?
I did. Yeah, wow. There wouldn't have been too many because it was around about 10-1. And
so you became a racing Ron Taylor. You were like a Bible. You were a compendium for people who would tune in to see who you tipped. Any other memorable tips that you gave that the horses won? But the ones that you thought, I'll go out on a limb here, and sure enough, it won.
Yes, there was. There was one called Saintly.
Yeah.
Oh, I've heard of Saintly. Yeah, yeah. Saintly was Bart Cummings' horse. And at the time, I'd left the Truth. I'd retired, but I was still doing a little bit of freelance work and going to the track every morning with a little watch, clocking the gallops and seeing what... And this horse, Saintly, he was a weight-for-age winner. But this particular year, Bart decided not to run him on the Saturday before the Cup. You know, the McKinnon Stakes?
Yes, yes, yes.
And that was what all... Mainly they the old trainers do. Would run their horse on the Saturday and then in the Cup on the Tuesday. But this year, Bart decided the horse didn't need a race on the Saturday. But what he did need was a good track gallop. So he took him down to Flemington on the Saturday morning, and they put the markers wide out. They wouldn't let him run near the rail to affect the track. Put him right on the outside, and... Darren Beedman, who rode him in that trial, took him right around the outside for 2,000 metres. I've got my watch, Sam, and I waited till he'd run a furlong. And when he got to the 9-furlong mark, I clicked the watch on. And I clicked it off when he got to the winning post. And he broke 2 minutes. He'd run that distance in, say, 1:59. And that was... a record track gallop. A horse that couldn't go that fast on the track. And I knew immediately that horse would win the Melbourne Cup. And so did everybody else who watched that gallop.
And it won it in 1996.
96.
That's what it says here.
So
Ron, what comes to mind? You're talking about your stopwatch there. I look at the way they analyse it now. They've got videos and trials and this and that and all the rest of it. Did you just rely on your eye and the stopwatch? You could. There were no such things as replays back in those days. Seem to come under far more scrutiny now. Is it easier to bet on a horse nowadays than in your time?
Oh, so much so, because there's so much more information. There you are. You've got videos of all their... their races. You can watch the race and the replays at home. You can see their track gallops. You can see their jump outs, their trials. The punter has never had so much good information to help him pick a winner. And
do you think the romanticism that existed in your time, you know, with the stopwatch, is still there, the mystique of racing back then, as it is today? I mean, the stories are just so colourful back in those old days. Are they still colourful today?
Oh, They're not as colourful these days because everything is so open stand.
Yep.
The trainers get on the radio on a cup day morning or race morning and they tell the public, well, yes, this horse has worked very well this week. I'm expecting it to nearly win. When I was reporting, they'd run a mile before they would tell you that the horse had a chance or they would disclose nothing.
Now, Ron, I got a feeling you're very well respected with the trainers and the owners and because they wouldn't be giving you tips. Was there ever a time when you thought, wow, I've got some explosive information here, but I'll keep it under my hat. It's just not worth jumping into the deep end of the pool. Or did you ever want to report something but didn't?
No.
You probably won't do it now either.
No. To be honest, I've got to be honest. No. I never kept anything back.
Didn't you? No.
No. Unless a trainer told me something in complete confidence.
Yep.
No, but they wouldn't do that, Sam. They wouldn't put you under that pressure and say, you know, I'll tell you, Ron, but don't you say anything to anybody. No, I never had to have that pressure and I was able to write openly and honestly.
Were you a punter or are you a punter?
No.
Were you ever tempted with the...
I bet. No. I'll plead guilty. When I retired...
In 93?
I thought, well, why am I... If I can pick winners in the truth, and that, why can't I have a bet and get a quid for myself out of this? So I got my superannuation and there was a bit of money there.
Yeah.
And I thought, I'm going to give this a try.
Really?
So I put aside... I'll tell you the honest truth. I put aside $2,000.
Yep.
And I said, I'm going to play with this now and earn some money for myself.
See if we can build on it.
And build on. So I had... First day out, I had 100 on this and 50 each way on that.
This is in the 90s? In the 90s?
This would have been... I retired in 93.
Yes.
So I had this $2,000.
Mid-90s, yep.
And I'm betting in 50s and 100s and going up to the bookie and nodding my head for 100 and thinking I was very smart.
Yep.
Do you know what? True as God, after about 3 weeks, I'd lost 500. And I stopped. I said, I can't do this. I'm no good.
Yep.
I stopped. So I stopped. I lost 500. I said, if I can't win... In that time, everything I backed to win ran second. If I backed them each way, they ran fourth.
Were you you married then? And is your wife still? Is your wife still with you?
I don't think I told her.
No.
That.
I was just going to say...
I think that might have been a sneaky...
You got a directive from the War Office, so stop that, Ron, immediately.
Yes, I don't think I would have told Lola that that I was punting 2,000. No, I reckon that was my little secret go, and I stopped very, very quickly.
Is Lola?
Yes.
Is she still with us?
No, Lola died in 2003, so it's been quite a while.
Yep, so it's 18, yeah. Yep,
but she was a champion.
Of course she was, yep.
And, yeah, she was a champion, but Stan,
you're life. You're a bloody champion, Ron. So you mentioned before charisma and... There is a certain romance in naming a horse, and of course, the ones we remember are all the champions.
Yeah.
This is another dopey layman's question, Don. What horse just captured your imagination with its name and it fitted its performance? I know there's Light Fingers and bloody Red-Handed and Think Big and Tullock and Kingston Town and Gundawindi and or whatever it was called.
Gundawindi Grey. Gunsind.
Yep. I know better. Winx, I thought, was a fantastic name for a horse.
Winx was a clever name.
Clever?
A clever name. And Winx. It fitted the horse.
Do you know one that just captured your imagination? You thought, shit, that's a good name.
Look, I think the name Light Fingers suited the horse.
Yep.
She was a little light-framed horse. And I'll never forget probably the first time I saw her and had a look at her, her forelegs, Don, were so tiny, I could imagine putting my
hand
fist around them and you close your fist. They were so tiny,
skinny
and fragile, and yet she could win over 2 miles.
Amazing,
I don't know, and she was only a little thing. And I know Roy Higgins loved her. He had photos of her in his house and everything.
The jockeys back in those days also fascinated me. I'd get the paper, the Sun and the Sporting Globe and whatever else, and they were starting to migrate and go to England.
They did.
Hutchison, Purtell,
George Moore,
Moore, all the rest of. And back then, and it fascinated me, and I don't. They used to say they had a clock in their head. Is that right?
Yes.
Were they taught to count? And I'd find that very, very on a horse.
When they were apprentices, when they were little boys starting off riding at
15. John, they used to count. Will you explain what I'm talking about to counting, John?
Well, trainers would refer to even time. Now, a horse to run even time would run 15 seconds to the furlong. So what
furlong
these little boys
were
trained to do was sit on the horse and count as they rode one dog, two dog, three dog, whatever it was.
An eighth of a mile.
And to count to 15 when they got to the furlong poles.
Yep.
And so when they got to the second furlong pole, they had to get there. If they were told to run evens, they had to get there on the count of 30.
Yep.
And if they had to go four furlongs,
45.
48.
Four, 48.
Four and 48, I think.
And they
four and 60. It's 60 for 15 to the furlong.
They were actually counting when they were on the horse.
As they rode along, they counted in their mind, of course. They didn't call it out to the horse, I guess. But they counted one dog, two dog, three dog, whatever, to a second, so that they knew the pace of the race. If they were in a two-miler, they would run the first two or three furlongs slowly.
Yep.
They just go slowly and they would count so that we know. But when they got to the half mile with the go, they'd know this was the time to click the horse up and start running 12 to the furlong.
So did this give the Australian jockeys who went to England or Europe back in those early days, did that give them an advantage over there because they were very successful?
I think they were just generally good riders.
They were
naturals. Scobie Breasley and George Moore, Ronnie Hutchinson, they were just great natural jockeys.
And you went overseas in your career to America and Britain and Europe?
Yes.
And can genuinely hold our place in the world racing scene here in Australia?
Oh. Absolutely. Well, we've been sending horses over there winning races. Lee Friedman has gone over there and won races. Peter Moody sent Black Caviar over there and she won races. Yeah, our horses have competed successfully, Sam, against those English horses.
See any of the great horses over there? I know their names. If you mention their names, I know them.
Miss Andretti was a brilliant sprinter and Takeover Target. Remember Joe Janiak, the taxi driver from Queanbeyan, and he had this horse that he picked up for 1,000 guineas or something. And he took it all around Australia and won big races. Took it to England, won the big race there and met the Queen.
What about a horse? Now, you'll probably say this is completely the only horse I can record. Secretariat was a... Is that not in your era or is that... When was that?
Secretariat, I didn't see him race.
Early.
Because he was before my time.
What was he?
But before my time as a racehorse. But I saw him as a stallion on the stud farm. And if you look at my book, Don, there's a nice picture of Secretariat in the book, which I took.
Wasn't he the sire of Kingston?
Farm in America.
The sire of Kingston Rule?
Spendthrift. Yeah. Secretariat out of... that's right.
So when did Secretariat run?
Kingston Rule was a dead ringer for Secretariat.
Yeah. And Kingston Rule holds the Melbourne Cup record.
Yeah, it's funny, Sam, you mentioned Secretariat. And the thing that comes to mind, and a lot of people, if they haven't done it already, you should get onto YouTube and type in Secretariat Kentucky Derby.
Yep.
And he won it by 32 lengths, the length of the straight. That's extraordinary. One of the world's best horses.
And what year was he? When did he run? 30s? It might have been 40s, 50s. I have no idea.
No, I'm hopeless.
No, but but before your time.
But he would have been racing when I was around.
Yep.
But I wasn't in America at that
time. No.
I was in America probably about 19. Late 70s,
so
maybe
80. So when and, did... Yep, go ahead. Sorry.
And at that time, I did go to the races where he won the Belmont Stakes in New York, and they had a lovely statue of Secretariat in front of the grandstand. And it wasn't a full-life one, Sam. At Maccabee Diva. But it was about half size. But it was a lovely statue of Secretariat that they'd put there to honour the horse.
Seemed to defeat the purpose of it, not making a life-size statue of a horse, wouldn't it?
Well, yeah, it was a bit odd.
Yeah, I reckon that's odd.
Yeah,
you'd like to see how big the bloody horse was.
That's right, it was odd, but at least they did him the honour of recognising what a great horse he was.
Well, I was just going to talk about the other colourful personalities in it, and that they're called race callers. They still do fascinate me, their memory with regard to knowing the colours of the horses. I know it's subjective. I'll tell you one of my favourites, but who do you think, Joe Brown going back, Bert Bryant and Bill Collins and whatever else, and we've got them right through to up till today, who stands out for you as far as giving a description of a race?
I think you've got to hand it to Bill Collins.
Yep.
Bill was word perfect. He studied public speaking. He had a lovely, melodious voice. And, he was very easy to listen to. He was dead accurate. Sam, the accurate one. I would think, they were all great. All those guys, fantastic callers. But Bill just had that something a little bit extra. He actually
seemed relaxed,
sort of sometimes too spoke with a plum in his mouth.
Yes, he did.
But he had a very good grip of the language, and his voice was melodious.
Racing into equine immortality.
Yes, that's
Bone Crusher, I think.
Bone Crusher races into, you're right, equine immortality.
Now, you know one of my favourites? Jack Styring.
Oh, of course.
Now, Jack never called Melbourne races, but he was country racing. He was unbelievable to listen to.
Yes. Well, Jack had a lot of quaint Australian sayings, Aussie-isms, you might call them. And he would call a horse that was being hard-held and... He's showing his molars to the breeze.
Colloquialisms.
Yeah, exactly, Sam. He was quite clever.
Now, Ron, we crossed paths just in my very limited capacity as a football caller and special comments man with Rex on 3AW. Yeah. You used to come in there. You were employed by 3AW to... Be the racing guru, and you did it on Channel 10. Yeah. How did you... Were those days at 3AW were memorable?
Absolutely memorable. And the banter, Don, that went on between Rex and Sam was pure easy. It was radio. It was great radio.
Well, I didn't bring it up for that reason, but you, no, why? But why were you, you were part of the sports team, were you, where we did racing and football?
Oh yes, Harry Beitzel had a team of racing footballers that he got into 3AW on a Saturday morning.
That's right.
You know, with Ron Barassi Murphy and a lot of guys that I can't remember. But they were all champion footballers. Yep. And Harry would get me in there to give a few tips. And before I'd go get out of the studio to the gate of the race, he'd slip me $100 and he'd say, put this on something for me.
Did he?
Yes. He loved a bit.
He did.
Yeah, he loved a bit, Harry.
Don?
Well, the other thing, back in the old days, why did a lot of people like yourself go under, what would we call them, pen names or... You know, they had these romantic names. They'd never put their name to
A story or
a tip or something, you know.
They had a nom de plume.
Nom de plume, yeah, okay. And why did they do this?
I don't know. Maybe because the proprietors, the people that owned the papers, didn't want, say, Jack Elliott to have his name up the front. Maybe.
What were some of the nom de plumes to give those people?
Yeah, what do I know?
Like it might be the turf master or the clocker or
Chiron. Chiron is not a well-known name, but
These people used to go and clock the, like you would go to the training and clock the horses.
Tony Kennedy, who was the racing editor of the Age, he wrote under the name of Heroic, who was a great horse, and Bill Hughes, who was the editor of the Sun, he wrote under the name of Sunstar. And that's right, Don, they did have these names of famous racehorses. So the story was written by Cardigan. Bert Wolfe wrote under the name of Cardigan.
But why did they do it?
Well, I just don't know. That when I came into the game, that's the way it was. You had a nom de plume. I wrote under various names. I think I wrote under the name of Floodlight when I was doing the trots.
You might remember at the start of this, I said the truth was owned by someone who had his dog as the secretary.
Yeah.
I've completely wrong. That man, I can't think of his name, owned the Toorak Times, if you'll remember. At the Toorak Times, and he was almost as outrageous as some of the things the truth did. But I can't think of his name, and he had a run-in, I think, with the tax department who questioned why his dog, his actual canine dog, was the secretary. And he said, well, he got a lot of his wisdom and guidance from his dog, and he was on the payroll. So I was just clearing that up. It was nothing to do with the truth.
No, there was Toorak Times. I do know the guy you're talking about, but I can't actually recall his name.
While you're speaking.
Because he had, you know, the Toorak Times was one of those little giveaway papers.
That's right.
It wasn't a prominent paper, not like, you know, in those days, the Melbourne Herald.
Yeah, but they had a lot of exclusive stories coming out of Toorak, didn't it?
Oh, of course they would. But Truth got a lot of those, divorce stories. They wrote some shocking stories about members of parliament and...
But the racing section was always creditable in the truth, wasn't it? You know, the other stuff was fairly flippant, but the truth had, you know, a real thing about it as far as the racing went.
Common sense, reliable racing guide, and it sort of had the reputation, Don, that people would say they only bought it for the racing guide.
That's right.
But the truth was... They bought it for the Page Three girl.
Jack Pacioli. Jack Pacioli,
I never knew him, Sam. He wasn't in my field, but...
It'll say something about his dog here. I'm just looking him up. Anyhow, so I've cleared all those things up. Now, Ron, Don, I think... Ron, you are... an icon, Ron. You look fantastic. A 93-year-old man sitting there. You look sharp as... Well,
and he's got a book out called Racing Ron, Winning at the Track and Life.
Yes.
There it is. Racing Ron by Ron Taylor.
And there's a couple... I'm not interested in racing really at all, but I've read, because we've interviewed a couple of people, Alan Tripp had a book out about the SP Bookie, the biggest probably in the world. Yes. We've interviewed his son Matthew here, and Andrew Rule has written a couple of racing books, and we interviewed Andrew here last week or the week before. And you've got a book out called Racing Ron, so they're I've read all the books, and I'll read yours too, because I'm not into racing, but some of the stories and the recollections of the great sport, the sport of kings, is extraordinary. Wow. And you are a star.
Well, you're very kind to say that, Stan, but I'm just a little fish in a big pond. But when I sat down to write that, a few memories did come back. And
how long ago did you write this?
Less than a year.
Now that is incredible. This man is 93 years old.
I know. I've just
and 92. He's written this book. You have got your marbles, my friend.
But look, a lot of things did happen, Sam. I took a lot of racing tours around the world to see the derbies and that. And there are a lot of funny little things happened on those tours.
And you can read about them.
Put into the book. That are nothing to do with racing as
good.
Such, that you'll be able to read it and think, oh, yeah, that interested me.
What's your secret to life? Do you exercise? Do you eat the right food?
I think I'm just a normal guy.
Good genes.
I think to try and stay calm, equitable, don't get worried. Don't let things worry you. Don't sleep on something that might be... Get it out of your head.
Don't
very
take
quickly.
Yourself too seriously.
Are you a drinker?
I think just don't. I try and be kind. Don't hurt anybody.
Karma.
Just be a
ordinary
guy.
Ron Taylor, Racing Ron Taylor. We gave you about 12 hours' notice to come and do this, and you've been fascinating, and you are a credit to the profession and
yourself.
Yourself.
Well, and look, before I go, don't say it all about it. I am very privileged to be here with two icons of the
don't
footy
bullshit,
world.
Don't bullshit, Ryan.
No, that's
the first bit of bullshit you've spoken.
Look, no, I don't have sort of heroes, but I respect people and I've always admired, and I do admire people who excel in sport, and I've always admired Sam and Don, both of you. And
righto.
Sam, how you went through all that entertainment business? I don't know.
Anyhow, Ron, I'm going to try. The panel operator's left us, so I'm going to try and finish this off now. So we go out with Daddy Cool and Ron, Racing Ron Taylor. The book is out called Racing Ron, and you're a star. And thank you so much,
and
Ron.
Thank you, gentlemen, for having me.